and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ParaX, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Step outside of your comfort zone. See the world with a whole new perspective. Join us and experience the unexplained on the Paranormal View.
And welcome, everybody, right here to the Paranormal View on the ParaX Radio Network. I want to thank everybody for taking the time to be with us tonight. I'm sure that a lot of people's probably out celebrating and having a great time since it is St. Patrick's Day. But if you're here with us, we're glad that you are. Should be a great show tonight. And if you are listening from around the world, we appreciate you also. And if you'd like to come over and join us, it's the Paranormal View at, come over to para-x.com and click on the live chat button and you'll be in with all these wonderful people. If you do have questions tonight, you'll be able to send questions to either Henry Foister, Ceiling Cat, Tina Marie, or Tina Miami, whichever one you want to call her, I don't care, and Tabby Cat, and we will get those questions answered for you tonight. And if you're listening from around the world and you got questions and you don't want to come to the chat room, you can send a question to theparanormalview@gmail.com, and we will get those answered also. We got a great show lined up tonight. Of course, I have with us Barbara Duncan.
Hello, everyone.
And we have back this week, Jeffrey Gould.
Hello, hello.
He's still with us. Sometimes yeah. He disappears. He's like a ghost.
Yeah, Skype just likes to phase me in and out.
And we got a couple of guests tonight that's going to really talk with us and everything. So we have with us Cat Gash.
Hello.
And we have Tina Marie with us.
I'm here.
All right. And everybody's sounding good, too. And I hope everybody has had a wonderful day today and a wonderful evening. I don't know how many of you plan on getting, celebrating after the show. But I guess you're all okay for right now. You know. Pouring the stouts or whatever. Anyway, But tonight, like I said, we got a great show, and because it is St. Patrick's Day, a little bit about St. Patrick. St. Patrick's Day is celebrated annually on March 17th, the anniversary of his death in the 5th century. The Irish have observed this day as a religious holiday for over 1,000 years. On St. Patrick's Day, which falls during the Christian season of Lent, Irish families would traditionally attend church in the morning and celebrate in the afternoon. Lenten prohibitions against the consumption of meat were waived, and people would dance, drink, and feast on the traditional meal of Irish bacon and cabbage. St. Patrick, who lived during the 5th century, is the patron saint and national apostle of Ireland. Born in Roman Britain, he was kidnapped and brought to Ireland as a slave at the age of 16. He later escaped but returned to Ireland and was credited with bringing Christianity to its people. In the centuries following Patrick's death, believed to have been on March 17th, 461, the mythology surrounding his life became ever more ingrained in the Irish culture. Perhaps the most well-known legend is that he explained the Holy Trinity, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, using the three leaves of a native Irish clover, the shamrock. So with that, tonight we're going to be talking all about St. Patrick's Day. We've got all kinds of information, mythology, facts, and all kinds of stuff, stories.
Yeah, but Henry, you left out one fact.
What did I leave out?
St. Patrick was also the patron saint of kitty cats.
Oh, kitty cats. Maybe that's why I'm running around here thinking that they're king today or something.
Patron saint of cats. I didn't know that one either.
Well, no wonder I like him so much.
Like I said, you're going to have all kinds of information tonight, so I hope everybody enjoys the show. I know each one of us has got a whole bunch of different things. We got some mythology and some facts and Cat Gash. And I don't know if Tina has been able to or not, but Cat Gash has visited Ireland and stayed in some of the castles and wrote some ghost stories in her book. So she's got a lot of information on that. Tina, have you been over to Ireland too?
Not yet. It is on my list, and we are looking at about another 5 more years till we can get there.
I got a bunch of stuff on my list, but it's never going to happen. So anyway,
Tina, you'll have to put me in your carry-on. I'm small enough to fit.
You are very, yeah. I promise not to put you in the overhead, though.
That's for sure. Not on United, anyway.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, I think she should let other people do the driving.
Ouch.
Yeah, you don't want to mess up there because you just kind of like fall into the ocean, you know? It just, you know, right off the cliff. And, yeah.
Hey, look at those white cliffs of Dover.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's pretty good, I think.
I'm never going to live this down.
You can forget that.
Oh, Lord.
I'm not even going to tell a story on that one. But
it's out there. People can find it.
So let's just start off with some of the stuff about Ireland. What are some of the stuff, the different topics that you're going to be talking about, Kat?
Well, mostly the myths and legends and the various different creatures and such that is in Irish folklore.
Okay, that sounds good. Me and you'll be doing battle with that then.
Okay.
Tina, what's some of the things you've got on your list?
Well, I decided to go a little bit different than you guys. I have Irish-themed movies and Irish food.
Well, now, the food's good.
Damn right, it's good.
I'm curious now as to what Irish bacon is. I mean, is it like the fake bacon they call it bacon in Canada, or is it like real bacon like what we have?
I'm going to say I don't know. I did not know that they called it bacon. I'm an Irish girl, but we always just had corned beef.
Ah, yeah, a lot of people has corned beef. Yeah. I would say that the Irish bacon is from Ireland and American bacon is from America. So,
well, I'm sure that, you know, the pig's heritage does not mean how it's cooked. I mean, that's like going up to Canada. Can I have some bacon? What the heck is this? Yeah. You know,
they call theirs a little bit different.
They've got little slabs of meat. That's not bacon. Sorry. No.
Well, I Googled it because I'm the smart one of the group tonight, apparently. Nice. It says back bacon. It's out of cured bacon, is sliced both pork loin and pork belly. And it looks like thick slices of ham, but it's cured bacon like.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've had it many a time. When they serve what they refer to as a traditional Irish breakfast over there, especially in the bed and breakfasts, they serve you with their bacon, which to me, in my opinion, just looks like a very thin slice of ham with maybe a little extra fat on it. And the way they cook it, of course, is on a skillet, and it browns and crisps all of that fat. So it crunches a little bit like bacon, but it's thicker. I mean, much thicker. And it doesn't have quite the brine that ours does. Okay. Over here, all of our bacon has so much brine in it that depending on what cut you get, excuse me, or what brand, you can get cuts of bacon that are really nasty. You can't even eat it.
Oh.
And over there, though, it's very mild, but it's cooked the same way. So the few times that I was served it, the first time I was over there, I thought, well, I'm just getting a big slice of ham.
Yeah.
In truth, it was bacon.
Nice.
Barbara, what's some of the things you've got?
I'm just going to be bringing up Irish and Celtic trivia.
Trivia. All right. That's good. Yeah. One of the things that I like about the food is I love the Irish stew.
Oh, yes.
You would have loved to have been here for my dinner then.
But, Kat, do you put Guinness in yours?
Oh, yeah. That's the reason good. That the – yeah. That's the reason that the Guinness I had just about an hour ago was flat. Because I had added most of it to the stew the first thing this morning and put the rest of it back in the refrigerator. So when I went to drink it, it was like bleh, flat.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was still good.
Wow.
What I wish, actually, I should say, one of my, and I'm sure Wales is a completely different country, obviously, but I grew up loving Welsh rabbit. And one of the aspects of the recipe is beer. But I always feel weird just going to the store to buy a beer to cook like a quarter of the can or more. And then, you know, pour out the rest. Because I never really got into beer. Although I can drink Guinness and I'm okay with mead. But that's not the same thing. Because Guinness is actually a stout, isn't it? It's not technically a beer.
Yeah, it's a stout.
But I just wish they would make, you know, how they have those new Coca-Cola cans that are like, you know, Barbie and Ken can lift them up kind of thing. If they made beers in those size cans that you didn't have to buy a six pack, you could buy one at a time, then I'm like, yeah, you can make Welsh rabbit tonight.
You're just going to have to get a lot more friends so you can get that whole six pack and, you know.
Definitely. We'll all have to meet at Jeffrey's next St. Patrick's.
There we go. Yeah.
Bring our own six packs.
There we go.
So they were talking about in that first part that I was reading about the shamrock. So what is the shamrock, the significance of it, and who's got all that information?
It's a prequel to Cloverfield. Oh, wait. No, I just.
Shamrock. A lot of people are under the misconception that the shamrock is the same thing that you find in nurseries. You know, when you go to a nursery or the Home Depot or Lowe's or something and you buy that thing of shamrocks, that's actually wood sorrel, which is not quite the same thing. It's got three leaves.
Sounds like something you got because you stubbed your toe or something.
Oh, yeah. Sorrel. Oh, no. Ouch. But the shamrock is actually a clover, and there's a couple of different kinds, and the clover that you find over here in our lawns that has either the pink flowers or the white flowers, that's a different kind of clover altogether. The shamrock over there is actually the kind of clover that grows almost on a vine. Rather than individual stalks, they actually are on a vine. And so when people go around looking for what they refer to as a four-leaf clover, it's just common grass clover. But the actual shamrock is the three leaves on the one that has almost like the vine. And I was fortunate that when I was in Ireland with my niece in 1998, we were at the Rock of Cashel. And we were walking up the side of the hill, and I happened to notice a big clump of it. Now, of course, you're really not supposed to bring anything back with you, you know, in your luggage that has to do with earth or foodstuffs or anything. But I went ahead and picked some and folded them in with my travel book. And when I got them home, I pressed them, I dried them, and I put them in frames, and I still have some after all these years. So it's not common that you find them, but you can go to various different places all over Ireland, around streams, and any place that has a lot of moisture in the ground. Now, yeah, granted, Ireland's got a lot of moisture because it rains a lot. But the wood sorrel is generally found closer to streams and those sort of places. So the things that you see here that they refer to as shamrocks, no, it's wood sorrel. But if you get an opportunity to get a hold of some real shamrocks, it's a rarity. They're just absolutely beautiful. And when you find them, yeah, you're on the top of your game.
Well, it is saying here that Ireland's patron saint, St. Patrick, used the shamrock as the metaphor for the Christian Holy Trinity because it had the three leaves.
Yeah. That's what he was known for with that, yeah.
Well, most of the people like St. Patrick, when they were trying to convert any people that were what we now consider as pagans, that worshipped gods and that sort of thing, in order to make things look more appealing to them, to convert them, they used things that they were familiar with in order to, you know, make more sense. So,
A huge church where we use, hey, didn't we have a full moon thing here last month? Where is this doing there?
Yeah. But that's what they did. I mean, heck, you know, a lot of people don't realize that our Christmas was not Christmas.
Yep.
It was an actual pagan holiday.
Oh, yeah.
But St. Patrick did just that. He knew that in order to make sure that the people of that area identified with his message, yeah, he had to use common things like shamrock. And it worked.
There's a great t-shirt I came across, and it shows a hooded figure pulling a little red wagon with a holiday Yule tree, an Easter rabbit, colored eggs, and it says, "Wow, for a religion that really hates us, you really stole a lot of our stuff."
Yeah.
Yep.
Really stole a lot of our stuff.
Huh? Yeah. Because there's a great movie called Lightning Bug, which no one's ever heard of, with Laura Prepon from 70s Show and all that. And one of the lead male is a young man whose mother is like Shades of Piper Laurie in the first Carrie, where she's a complete Bible thumper and fundamentalist. And she's like enraged that he's going to go to some Halloween celebration. And she literally says, you know, that's based on a pagan holiday. And he goes, yeah, well, so is Christmas.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, Barbara, what's one of the trivia questions you have?
Oh, not trivia questions. It was just trivia.
Oh, trivia answers.
Oh, okay. Give us one.
But you can do it in the form of a question, I'm sure, like Jeopardy.
Probably do it in the form of a question.
Dang, we should set that up and all had bells.
Darn it.
Ding.
Ding, 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 ding.
Well, now I don't have it ready yet because I was looking at other stuff.
Okay, well, then just I'll pass this time then. Well, I will ask you while I got you on here. Did everybody hear the intro?
Yeah. I did.
Yeah. I did.
And are you taping?
Uh-oh.
Of course.
Oh, good.
I thought she asked you if you were taping, Henry.
No, I was busy trying to get everybody in, remember?
Okay.
However, what I will do, though, is I will go ahead and start it now, even though I missed some of it. We'll have some of it anyway, but Barbara.
Well, at least with Barbara recording it, at least it'll be on Podomatic within like 30 minutes of the show being over.
Yep. So you're trying to say something. Okay. Some of the things that they have over there, which they have a lot of different stuff in Ireland.
I think a lot of places have a lot of different stuff, Henry.
I mean, when you get on some of these sites and start trying to read some of the stuff, it's in like Gaelic or whatever. And I'm sitting there trying to read it. And I said, there's no way in the world I'm going to try and pronounce any of that stuff on this show. There's
well, that's because you spell bra differently.
Oh, Lord, this is going to be a neat evening.
Well, let's put it this way. When my Southwest commercial starts airing, if the residuals are really nice, it would be great if I could get out to Gettysburg in April. And then you'll have to suffer through this in real time. Well, it's already real time. But, you know,
I do that when I go there anyway. So one of the things that, that they have over there is the leprechaun.
Woo-hoo.
And yeah, the leprechaun is one of Ireland's more famous characters from Irish folklore, who have become renowned all over the world. The mischievous leprechaun has captured the imagination of millions of people over the years, and there are tales from some of how they've sighted these wee folk in the Irish countryside. Now, I got a whole bunch of stuff here on leprechaun, but I bet Barbara's got a bunch of it on leprechaun 2. And
before, leprechaun 2 wasn't as good as leprechaun 1 with Jennifer Aniston. Oh, wait, you were meaning
talking about them. I will ask Kat Gash, though, when you were over there, did you see a leprechaun?
Not that I'm aware of, but that isn't to say they weren't there watching.
Okay.
I mean, I definitely had a fae or a she to follow me around, and that story is told in my book Under Fairy Feline, but whether or not there were any leprechauns, yeah, there was a few places that I looked around and I thought I saw something scampering through the woods, but it could have been a chipmunk.
A chipmunk.
Very well-dressed chipmunk, apparently.
Yeah.
Wow. So, Barbara, what you got on leprechaun?
They're always after...
They're not like fish. Actually, we're always after his lucky charms.
I don't like Leprechaun 2 as much as I like Leprechaun 1. But, you know...
Right. Or the subsequent sequels. So
when you
How
have
that became a franchise, I don't know.
When you have a meal, you only want one leprechaun, not two?
Well, no, that was back in the 80s, before Jennifer Aniston was on Friends, and still very much a brunette. She starred in a silly little horror film called Leprechaun, with, I think it was Warwick Davis, playing this evil leprechaun. It is Warwick Davis.
Okay. Yes. Yep. I have that. That's on my list of movies.
Oh, cool. But yeah, Henry, he comes over to America because somebody managed to find his crock of gold and took a few coins, and he's got to get his gold back. And of course, he leaves chaos and mayhem in his wake. So yeah, you don't want to mess with Warwick Davis. I mean, the guy's an Ewok and carries spears and stuff.
So did you know that? Here's your leprechaun trivia. How many leprechaun movies were there?
I think there were seven.
You got it, Jeffrey. Yeah. Seven. And I'm sorry, Kat, I cut you out. Sorry.
There were seven?
Yep.
Seven of them.
Some of them were just like, I'm not even going to bother.
Yeah, that's probably why I stopped at four.
Yeah. Because once he started getting into the hip-hop and the stuff like that, I'm like, no, I'm done.
Oh, my God. Yeah, did you know that the term leprechaun is actually... in Gaelic, translated into shoemaker, or a different version of it is for pygmy. Well, I suppose that's a more modern term, but pygmy, meaning short.
Sure.
And it says they usually appear to be small, aged men who have had slightly too much to drink. Oh, goodness.
In Ireland? What
the? That's what they say. It said their tipple of choice is rumored to be homebrewed poteen. Oh, man, I've had that. That is some nasty stuff.
Knock that's, you on the back?
Oh, yeah. That's similar to our country moonshine. It is strong. It's like rubbing alcohol.
So I would guess like potatoes, like vodka kind of, or what is it?
Distilled? Oh, yeah. Yep.
It's like a mash.
Yep. It's a mesh. And it said they've apparently appointed themselves protectors of the treasure left by the Danish when they marauded through Ireland, and it's widely believed that they store it in crocks or pots. They avoid contact with humans at all costs, as their gold is highly important to them, and they consider us to be quite greedy and foolish. Duh.
Yeah.
If a leprechaun is captured by a mortal, they will offer great wealth in exchange for their freedom. However, before you go leprechaun hunting, you should know that it is most likely not worth the trouble, because they carry two pouches with them at all times. One contains gold that turns into leaves or ashes when it's parted from the leprechaun, and the other holds a silver coin, which will return to its pouch soon after it's traded. And this is what I thought.
It's very Harry Potter of them.
Oh, yeah. It said another member of the leprechaun family is the Cluricon. These beings have the power to steal or borrow almost anything from humans easily and without consequence. And they also enjoy causing mischief in houses at night by raiding wine cellars. They've been known to steal dogs, sheep, goats, and even domesticated fowl and ride them across the Irish countryside.
So are they? Is that from where the story of the borrowers come from?
Yes. Actually, that's exactly where it came from.
Cool.
Wow. And that was something I just learned today, as a matter of fact.
Well, obviously on Twitter all day, we've been discussing St. Patrick's Day and all that. And one person, I'm trying to remember, they point out that they'll show Christmas Story for 80 hours in a row in December, ABC, which is owned by Disney. But at St. Patrick's Day, they never show Darby O'Gill and the Little People.
That is my favorite movie.
Same here. It's one of my all-time top Disney life show things, which is what I'm going to be discussing in a bit. But yeah, and I said, you know, I know, right? Why would they not show their one of their best, live action? And yeah, it can get scary, but no, pretty tame by today's standards. But still, there's some great moments in it.
Yeah,
and you get to hear Sean Connery. You get to hear pre James Bond Sean Connery sing.
Oh yeah,
that's awesome. Do you know leprechaun facts? There are no female leprechauns.
No female leprechauns?
No wonder they're so pissy.
They got to be real old, then, because if they're not reproducing.
Or just in a way we don't know.
Yeah, they got to be some way where they're, getting them, you might say.
Well, it's sort of like the djinn in the movie Wishmaster, where the girl actually wishes him to kill himself, and so he essentially blows a bullet through his djinn through the top of his head, and then it repairs itself. He says, "You cannot kill what is eternal." So perhaps simply leprechauns are folk that have always been and always will.
Possibly.
Well, a little bit more for you. You do know that leprechauns are a form of fairies.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's why they're the fae folk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
More leprechauns. Just on a trivia. Did you know that leprechauns originally wore red? Yes.
Yes.
Well, their hair.
Leprechauns
for
wore
sure.
red and tri-cornered hats, buckles, and shoes.
Well, you got to be worried about deer hunting season. So, you know.
Why did they wear red instead of green?
Deer hunting season. And they were school crossing guards.
Unless the people that seen them in red must have been around Christmas time.
What? I'm trying to connect the dots on that one.
Santa Claus?
I haven't been able to find any reason. Everything that I've looked at, there's a couple of different fairies that supposedly wore red instead of green. But there really wasn't much of an explanation as to why.
Generally, elves were usually red.
Yeah, or gnomes.
Yeah. Have you seen the YouTube video of the little gnome down in, Portugal or something, or Brazil, that terrified this group that was sitting there? And you look over, and sure enough, there's this little garden gnome-sized gnome dressed exactly like you'd see in the gnome book. And the legs move exactly like a fat little gnome, not like someone in a fat suit. It's creepy. It's very creepy.
No thanks. I get creeped out by that goofy little African doll in the Trilogy of Terror. Oh, thanks. Now I'm going to be having nightmares. Thank you so very much.
Hey, that was a Dan Curtis production.
Why didn't somebody just take away the darn spear? I mean, really?
Well, she tried. She cut her hands.
She didn't realize that, you know, when the little waist necklace fell off. And but the thing was, is what's trying not to cough. I forgot my point.
He had big teeth.
He did have big teeth. He kind of had Fizgig teeth.
Yeah.
Does anyone recognize Fizgig?
But one good baseball bat.
Okay. Cool.
Take them out.
Well, she tried everything. I mean, she just really stomped the living daylights out of that little thing, and he came back anyway.
Well, he upgraded to a steak knife, so, you know.
Yeah.
Wasn't that Karen Blackett played the part?
That's what I was going to say, because a friend of my, an acquaintance of mine who's a filmmaker, cast her in one of her films. And her manager or agent said, don't bring up Trilogy of Terror. That's the one thing you can't talk to her about. And this is a director writer of the film. He's being told not to tell her about that. And at the end of the film, which was actually set in caveman times, either, I don't know if it was at the end or in the middle, she got into a squatting position with a bone and started hitting it on the floor. And on his director's commentary saying, considering that I wasn't allowed to talk to her about Trilogy of Terror, there she's doing the end of Trilogy of Terror.
Yep.
Oh, my God.
Hmm. The famous Irish writer and poet W.B. Yeats is quoted as saying, Yeats goes on to tell the story of a woman who had been spirited away by the fairies and had been reunited 7 years later, minus her toes.
Ah!
She had danced them off. You'll hear a leprechaun before you'll ever see one. If you're ever out in the rural countryside and hear a tap, 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 it's usually the sound of them hammering nails into the soles of a shoe, but try and find whoever is making the noise is next to impossible.
Wow.
Like those darn woodpeckers, or I don't know if they're in Ireland.
Oh, there's all kinds of strange birds in Ireland. I mean, you go over there and you're used to hearing certain birds, you know, here in the States. And you go over there and suddenly all these weird sounds. And some of them are beautiful. But probably the strangest sound that I ever heard the first time was not the crow, but the magpie. The magpie has got the strangest sound I have ever heard in my life. And it sounds like all of the horror movies that you see with big black birds in them. And instead of being a caw, caw type of thing that we hear with crows, these things make some really nasty sounds. And so if you're in like a graveyard area or some ruins and you suddenly see a bunch of magpies, it's weird. It's strange.
Once they start saying, I know what you did last summer, that's when you start to worry.
Yeah.
When they look at you,
so,
you really worry.
Yeah.
You're like, hey, you're not a magpie.
Nevermore. Nevermore.
So where do leprechauns live?
Generally, they're supposed to be living predominantly under the ground, but they can live in other places as well. Old ruins, old houses, in caves, and supposedly, if you are in an area where there's a number of leprechauns and you're by yourself and you do something to harm the area where they're living, they can do you some harm. They can either follow you and cause mischief or something like that. And because of that, you know, leprechauns have gotten a bad rap. because not only are they supposed to trick you when it comes to their treasure, but if you happen to invade their territory, they will do something about it. Hey, it sounds like most people.
Yeah, how dare you? They protect their own property.
Yep.
There are actually massive areas of Ireland that are cordoned off that cannot be developed so that the wee folk can be left alone.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, here we go. Yates says,
all right.
Solitary fairies like the leprechauns wear red jackets, whereas trooping fairies wear green.
Ah. So is the difference?
One lives alone, another has a community.
Exactly.
So if they're in the community, they wear green. If they're alone, wear red.
The leprechaun jacket has seven rows of buttons and seven buttons on each row.
Well, then apparently somebody somewhere has seen leprechauns to be able to go into detail like that.
Mr. Yates, apparently.
And if they're wearing yellow, it means go very fast.
Oh, God.
They're divided here. The northern leprechaun wore a military red coat with white breeches and a high pointed hat. The Tipperary wore an antique slashed jacket of red with peaks all around and a jockey cap. The Kerry leprechaun was a fat, pursy little fellow whose jolly round face rivals in redness the cutaway jacket he wears that often has seven rows of buttons. The Monaghan wore swallow-tailed evening coat of red and green. Apparently there's a lot more different types of leprechauns than we thought.
Oh, it's like neighborhoods.
Yep.
The turf.
And of course, I don't know how they found the ones in Tipperary because it's a really long way to get there.
Jeez.
Don't ask me. I got lost in the Ring of Kerry.
You don't want to get lost in the fairy ring, that's for sure. You lose your toes.
Coffee for Dessert in the chat room said that they live in her cereal box.
Oh, there's, and I thought I'd save the image, but I didn't. But one of the photoplasty things on Cracked was talking about stuff that's, you know, technically in the news, and they put a comical spin on it. But apparently one of the marshmallows in Lucky Charms is an hourglass, and they're phasing that out for what they call as a unicorn. But they point out, he says, but it turns out it's actually just a unicorn head, like it's a decapitated unicorn. And the image is the Lucky Charms guy raising up his blankets, and the unicorn head is in his bed like the Godfather.
Oh, God.
God, that conjured up an image.
Got a question in the chat room. They wanted to know if they are also considered elementals.
Well, they're earth elementals, kind of.
Leprechauns are considered a form of an elemental. The majority of the fairy folk referred to in Irish and Celtic mythology and lore have a great deal of basis in their pagan beliefs, where they looked at not only small beings but also the animals in reference to how to explain certain things. You have birds that fly that have to do with the wind. You have fishes and so forth that have to do with the water. And then you have the earth, which is generally things like small animals and so forth. So, yeah, you have all this broad spectrum of elementals. And leprechauns and most fairies could probably be considered that because they're supposed to have some sort of an effect on the environment in one way or another.
And one of their main treasures is gold. So,
yeah. Yes, and that's an element, dog.
Yep. Right at their dinner table, they have a periodic table, too.
Jeffrey.
Well, it could be a side periodic table.
I'm not touching that with...
And you don't drink, Jeff.
No, I don't. I can. I mean, I can take a shot now and then, but I don't drink. I've never developed a taste for alcohol to say, hey, I want to drink a lot more of that. You know, it's sort of like, you know, if everyone's going to, like, toast the dead father of the patriarchy of the family, then, yeah, I've had whiskey, I've had scotch bourbon, and I'm fine with that. I'm like, oh, that is not unpleasant. But it's not like, now I must go out and buy a case. No, I'm not going to be doing that.
Okay. Tina.
Yes.
You had a lot of stuff on food, and what was the other stuff that you had?
Irish-themed movies.
Irish thing. Well, we haven't been talking about the leprechauns. Hey. What about something about the food?
Hey, she's got her movie there's stuff. More than just Darby O'Gill.
But and that's okay. You know what, Jeff? You claim Darby O'Gill first, so I'm going to give that one to you. Cool. So you got that one. I'll get the others later.
Yay.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't know about everybody else, but my favorite now. I grew up in Pennsylvania. I am English, Irish, a little bit of Potawatomi, but we never really got into, you know, eating Irish food, eating English food. It wasn't anything that was really big to us growing up. But when I married my husband, who is a Ronin, come on, how much more Irish can you get?
I don't know. Sounds kind of Japanese too.
Well, yeah, spelled a little different, but almost the same meaning. Which Ronin does mean little seal.
Yeah. So, do you give him a lot of tuna or sardines or?
No.
Cat Ronin is named the same way. She's got the female version of that. Instead of being Ronan, it's Ronnad.
Ah.
Now, she's a Seal Point ragdoll.
Well, so there's your
I
seal.
Call her
yep.
Little seal.
Yep. Little seal. That's what it stands for. But anyway, when I married my husband, their family was very big on Irish feasts. So watching my mother-in-law, I learned how to make corned beef and cabbage. And we always have our potatoes and carrots. And my God, everything is boiled. By the time dinner comes around, the windows are so steamed up in the house, you can't see out. But no, we always have our corned beef and cabbage, potatoes and carrots. And we have our Irish soda bread that we like, and we usually finish off the night with, you know, a nice Irish coffee. So yeah, we do the traditional stuff.
I've always wondered about soda bread. Is that like Pepsi or Coke? Oh wait.
So Irish soda bread.
Yes.
Made.
How is that made?
Yeah.
It's made like regular bread. But you use, you know, you use baking soda in there. It's basically why they call it soda bread. It's literally just bread. It doesn't seem to rise quite as big as our bread here. You usually see what looks like a lump of dough and they've baked it. But you can get it with like currants or raisins in it. We just get plain and we cut it and it looks like a long piece of bread. When you cut it like a long
those
slice.
French bread loaves?
No, not long like that. Imagine just a large bit of dough that you have put into the oven to, you
like
know.
Like pound?
Yes, like that. So when you slice it, you have a long slice. It's not a cute little slice of bread. It's a long slice. And you use that because that's how you get the gravy and the last of the stuff on your plate. It's like a third utensil. You know, what? You got your fork, your knife, and your spoon. I'm sorry, fourth utensil. Big, long slice of bread. So, another one that we like to make here from time to time, and I will have to give a shout out to my son, Bill, because he makes the best I've ever had, was shepherd's pie. Oh, man, do we love shepherd's pie. What's nice about that is it uses, again, potatoes, which were prevalent in Ireland. Everybody had their potatoes, well, until the famine. But you take, it's your mashed potato, you got your carrots, your potatoes, you got some meat down there, nice roast meat, and it's got lots of gravy, and then you top it with mashed potatoes. Some of the potatoes sometimes have more herbs than others, depends on how you make it. Everybody makes it a little bit different. And then you bake it so that the mashed potatoes on top, which you have drug a fork through, get nice and crusty. So it's like the top of a pie, like a meat pie. Oh, that is good. And Bill does make a good one.
Well, as long as you don't get ingredients from Fleet Street, I guess you're okay.
Yeah, we're good then, yeah.
I'm trying to remember if which of you ladies watch Doctor Who.
I haven't recently. I must say I've not seen any new ones, but...
Well, yeah, but back in the classic era, there was an episode called The Two Doctors where the second doctor ends up meeting the sixth doctor, and the second doctor is infected to become essentially a creature called an Andragum, which eat human flesh. And he and this other Andragum are walking around, and he's not thinking clearly, and the Andragum asks him, he says, do they, you know, what kind of meals can we eat here? Can we eat some of the people? And he goes, well, I have heard of a dish called shepherd's pie.
Oh, dear.
Oh, no.
Oh, Lord.
Some of the shepherds.
As long as you don't get that wooden staff in there, I guess it's all right.
Oh,
now let's
yeah,
talk a little
yeah,
bit about
I want
Irish
that.
Stew.
Yes.
Yes. Well, Irish stew is made with Guinness. I'm sorry. There yes. are people who out there who make Irish stew and do not put Guinness in it. I'm sorry.
Oh, I do.
That's not an Irish stew.
I do.
Kat, you probably have a good recipe for that. I mean, I've had it. I will have to admit, I have not made it myself. I have gone other places and had it. We have a huge Irish, basically Irish food here in a restaurant nearby, and they have the best Irish stew I think I have ever had. But then again, I haven't had cats. So
you eat cats?
Was...
What?
Hey.
No, there's no cat meat in my stew, but
Irish.
It was actually pretty good. I made it for the first time in the crock pot. I wasn't exactly sure how it was going to work out, but after I, you know, browned the beef and everything and threw everything in the crock pot, I left it in there for slow cooking for 8 hours. And by the time I stirred it up and poured it in the bowls and everything, that meat was just breaking apart with the spoon. It was just absolutely fantastic.
Bubbling in the
crock pot.
And
that is
right
how
now.
Your meat should be.
Yeah.
And now my recipe has soy sauce in it as well.
Ooh. I don't think I've ever had it with the soy sauce in it. Have
it
you, Kat?
Kind of sweet. No. Sorry. If I'm going to have Chinese food, I'll have Chinese food.
Well, I think it adds a little bit of the saltiness to it because otherwise you don't put salt in it. Just use the soy sauce.
Are you saying it's bland?
It's not bland. Well, I don't know. With the Guinness in there and the potatoes and the carrots, I don't know. To me, it's not bland.
I wouldn't call it bland. But unfortunately, when you put anything in a crock pot, it has a tendency to blanch out the salt. So you really don't want to add a whole lot of salt to begin with because it will dry out the meat. Mm-hmm. So by the time everything is finished, when you put it in the bowl, you got to bring out the salt and pepper. There's just no doubt about that.
Well, soy sauce has a salty type of flavor to it. So does the crock pot negate it or something?
You know, in about 2 hours.
Okay.
Well, I've never, as far as I know, had anything like that with beer in it. So,
it's different. It's different.
Make beer bread,
there are a lot of,
which is really good.
When I was down at Disney World down there, Disneyland, whichever one's in Florida,
World,
we went to the different areas, you know, for the restaurants and stuff, and I went to one of the Irish places and had. Had the pie, and
I don't think that they put beer in it.
They well, the thing is, when they cook food with beer, the beer burns off. It's not an alcoholic dish.
No, it's just for flavoring.
Yeah,
the beer bread taste does which not is taste why, like beer.
Exactly.
Neither does Welsh rabbit.
Okay. It's also to thicken up the water. I noticed that after I put the Guinness in the pan, because you take the beef and everything and you have to brown it first of all, and then after you take all the beef out, you throw in your garlic and your mushrooms and your onions in the same pan, and then you add a certain amount of beef broth and a certain amount of Guinness, and you scrape everything up and you let it sit. And then you add a little more flour to it to thicken it up. So by the time you're finished and throw all of that in the crock pot, you've got your thickness. But I tasted the mixture before it got really hot, and I could still taste a lot of the alcohol flavoring. Mm-hmm. But
that
once...
was all you wanted.
Oh, yeah. But once I, you know, went ahead and got everything out of the crock pot for dinner, I couldn't taste the alcohol flavoring. All I could taste was the, you know, almost the chocolatey flavor of the stout. Right. That's what I could taste in the broth.
Yeah, I've got it figured out now. Now I understand why you can't follow directions.
Uh-oh.
Whoa, wait. Yeah, I guess. You know.
She does not carry Guinness everywhere, Henry.
No.
But she should.
Well, now I've got a really good way to find my way because Tina provided it.
It should be there Tuesday.
Oh, thank you.
Did you send her a yellow ribbon or something to tie around her face?
No. She challenged me to make her a Mad Hatter's hat, and I did, and it is so, I just kept cat in my mind the whole time I'm creating a Mad Hatter's hat, and instead of on the front, instead of it having like a pocket watch like the White Rabbit had in Alice in Wonderland, I put a compass on there, so no matter where she goes, she'll always know how to get home.
Yep.
Or at least know where to find
which way to point it.
Yep.
Yeah, just exactly. End up just finding, you know, moss on a tree.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. So after I get my hat, I'll wear that when we're in Gettysburg, and I promise you, Henry, I won't get lost.
Okay. You don't have a GPS or Google Maps or anything on
your
phone? That'll...
Actually, I do have a GPS in my car, but the thing is neurotic.
That's because of too much Guinness.
Must be an Irish GPS.
Something.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Never going to live it down.
Nope.
Nope.
So, Kat, I've got to ask you, when you were over in Ireland, did you have Colcannon?
Yes, I did.
And it's literally just cabbage and mashed potatoes, right?
That's it.
Yeah. Okay. So it's just a funky mashed potatoes that they have with their meat, with their ham,
yes.
Like corned beef or lamb. Yeah,
that's all it is. But the way they prepare it, you can actually taste the difference. Instead of being all mushed up together,
right?
You can taste, but all of it, you know, in different bites.
Nice.
So yeah, it was good. I had to put a little bit of salt and pepper on it, but yeah, it was good.
I was going to say, is it spicy?
Because I know when.
No. Oh, heck. Irish food? Yeah. Spice? No.
Don't they use rye seed or something when they're making it?
There's a certain amount of rye involved, but to me, it doesn't have the same kind of connotation as what we refer to as spices.
Right.
Over there, it's just to bring out the flavoring.
Mm-hmm.
It's like when we use sauerkraut, you know, for German food, we sometimes put celery seed. in there. Well, they do the same thing with different spices, but it's not quite the same thing. Mm-hmm. But no matter how much spice the Irish use, I'm sorry for anybody out there that's absolutely Irish and listening in that are from Ireland. I'm sorry, but you guys don't have a whole lot of spices in your food. You still have to add them.
Maybe they don't have too many spices over there.
Well, yeah, I think that may have been it. Tina, is that probably more right than not? Is that
probably
their history just didn't have a whole lot?
And I don't think that they could grow a lot of the same spices that we can in our mixed climate that we have here. It's basically cold, wet with a little small amount of warmth. There's only like, 2 months where they've actually got nice, warm, summery type weather.
Yeah,
not
exactly.
Well, I think since we've done blow past our first break, that we
have
should
we?
Actually take a quick look break anyway.
Is considered a spice?
ask Kat. She would probably know.
Well, actually, she'd be asking Pat McCormick for that one because that's his favorite drink.
That's true, true. Yeah. All right. Jeff, I'm going to let you take us out.
Cool. Maybe I'll do a bio one of the. Oh, wait, no. You're listening to The Paranormal View on para-x.com with hosts Henry Foister, Ceiling Cat Barbara Duncan, and myself, Jeffrey Gould, with tonight's returning guests, Tina Marie Ronan and Kat Schneider Gash. So stay tuned for more of The Paranormal View after the break.
Hi, this is Hollywood Hunt writer Marla Brooks, and you're listening to the Para-X Radio Network.
So, Tim, around here at Para-X, we're considered oldies because we've been here so long, right?
You know, yeah, but, you know, there's nothing wrong with oldies. In fact, you know what? I really love oldies.
Well, yeah, me too. I mean, it kind of takes me back to a time when my cauldron had training wheels, and the Black Cat Lounge was called the Black Kitten Lounge. Sometimes I miss the good old days.
Sis, there's no need to miss them at all, because all you have to do is turn on and listen to Rock with the Shock.
Rock with the Who?
No, 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 little sis. No, 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 not the Who, the Shock.
Hi, this is Mike from Mr. G's Ice Cream Store in Gettysburg, the most haunted ice cream store in town. Stop in and see us next time you're around. We feature 16 flavors of homemade ice cream made right here in the store. Look forward to seeing you.
Are you psychic? Do you often have dreams that come true? Do you have an interest in hypnosis or astrology? If you'd like to learn more about classes, events, and books on metaphysics, then go to our website, www.theartofmediumship. This is Elaine Kosmaskis, director of the New England School of Metaphysics and author of The Art of Mediumship.
It's always time for the dead to shine in Hollywood. The legendary Dearly Departed Tours has stepped up their ghostly game by offering the Hollywood Ghosts and Legends Walking Tour. Dearly Departed has long been an orb of hope in the paranormal world, having been featured on television's Haunted History and Haunted Collector. Their terrible tales have been made infamous in Marla Brooks' The Ghosts of Hollywood books. The new Ghosts and Legends Tour is a 10-block, 70-minute dusk time stroll down the boulevard of broken dreams. You'll be guided through the golden age of Hollywood and see where the unearthly Bela Lugosi, Lon Chaney, and the calamitous Black Dahlia are still said to linger. You'll see Hollywood's gothic hotels, legendary theaters, and restaurants, never forgetting their permanent occupants. No stranger to investigations, Dearly Departed Tours has first-hand knowledge of some of these hauntings. For details of the Hollywood Ghosts and Legends Walking Tour, find Dearly Departed Tours on Facebook, DearlyDepartedTours.com, or call 1-855-600-DEAD.
There's a darkness in the hallway. voices that seem to come from nowhere. Alone at night, there is a feeling that something or someone is near. Where can you go? Who can you turn to? Para-X Radio. Our knowledgeable host and expert guest can help you find some answers and take a glimpse into the unknown. Para-X Radio. Programming for the open mind.
Rhett, where are you going?
I'm going back to the paranormal view, back where I belong.
Please, take me with you.
No, I'm through everything here. I want to see if there's something left in life I haven't explored. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, Rhett, don't run to them. They talk about ghosts and hauntings, UFOs and all kinds of supernatural scary stuff.
You'll never understand, will you, Scarlet?
No.
Well, that's your misfortune.
Rhett, if you go, where shall I go? What shall I do?
Frankly, my dear. Fine.
You gotta be kidding.
The Paranormal View with your host, Henry Foister, Jeffrey Gould, and Barbara Duncan. Every Saturday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, exclusively on the Para-X Radio Network.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
And welcome back, everybody, right here to the Paranormal View on the Para-X Radio Network. I want to thank everybody for being with us tonight, those listening here and those listening from around the world. We have with us, well, I take that back.
What?
We have Barb Duncan with us. Yes. And speaking of those from around the world, where do we have listeners at tonight?
You're coming in from all over the United States, the United Kingdom, Canada, and welcome to our listener in Dublin, Ireland.
All right. And we hope that we're making you proud with Ireland history and folklore and all the good stuff.
Stacking up information for the lawsuit. And,
We have also with us Jeffrey Gould.
Hello.
And we have Kat Gash.
Sláinte.
And we have Tina Marie Ronan.
Still here.
All right. So we got everybody. You guys were kind of winded and took us through first break. So we're probably not going to have another break because I got a feeling you guys are going to be able to talk the rest of the night, too.
More Irish movies.
More Irish movies.
Yes.
All right. Let's get some Irish movies here.
More Irish movies. Well, there was a good one with John Wayne called The Quiet Man.
Yes,
that was came out in 1952, and it was in the 1920s era, and it was about an Irish-born American from Pittsburgh travels to Ireland to reclaim his family's farm and his birthplace and Innisfree, is that how it said, Kat?
Innisfree,
okay.
It's there's an H in there, so you pronounce the whole thing Innisfree.
Got it. Okay. He meets and falls in love with the fiery Mary-Kate Danaher, which is Maureen O'Hara.
He starred in movies with her.
Hmm? Yes.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. There's another good one that was not everybody has heard about it, but it was truly a really good movie. Came out in 1989. It was called My Left Foot.
Yes. And it was.
You know that Daniel Day-Lewis and I share the same April 29th birthday, right?
Do you really? That's awesome. Yeah. Yep. He was the one who played Christy Brown. It was a boy who was born with cerebral palsy. He was born into a working class Irish family. And even though he was a quadriplegic and essentially paralyzed, he had a miraculous event at the age of 5 when he realized he could move his left foot. Nothing else, just his left foot. And he used to he used chalk to write words on the floor. he just became, overcame everything and ended up becoming a painter, a poet, and an author, all by using just his left foot.
That was an excellent movie. That was probably one of the first films that I really actually fell in love with Daniel Day-Lewis. I mean, he's a phenomenal actor. It's too bad that he decided to retire, but my favorite movie with him in it.
How often have we heard actors saying, I'm retiring, and he didn't win for Phantom Thread, and all I get to give is, maybe I shouldn't retire quite yet. Although, having seen Phantom Thread, I saw it like its opening weekend, all I get to give is, what is this? It just, I don't know what the appeal of it was, apart from, hey, it's a period piece, and we're acting. And I'm like, okay.
So I didn't miss anything.
No. I mean, it wasn't a terrible movie. It was just like, what? And the resolution was even more like, wait, did David Lynch suddenly take the reins?
You know, if I hear a movie, somebody has seen a movie and they say what during it, that tells me I'm not going to waste my money to go see it, buy it, rent it. Not worth it. I'll wait till it comes out and it's free and I'll maybe look at it. But all right, back to the movies. Who can forget the one with Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman, Far and Away, came out in 1992.
Yes.
Good.
Yep, that was a good one. And they played Irish immigrants seeking their fortune in 1890s America and eventually taking part in the land run of 1893. That was the best part of the whole freaking movie, is that land run.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Oh, my gosh, that was awesome.
Oh, and we learned you don't want to be offside.
No. Oh, my God.
Probably my best part of the whole film was the theme music, which I absolutely fell in love with. But the Far and Away was done by Anya. And
well, everything changed. She does something that's awesome.
Oh, yes. And so
that was Ron
even
Howard
though I'm
movie,
not,
right?
Yeah, it was. Even though I'm not a Tom Cruise fan, I like Nicole Kidman.
Oh, yeah.
But as soon as I heard that Anya was doing some of the music for that, I turned it on just to watch it, just to listen.
Okay, our next one is Circle of Friends. Came out in 1995. Minnie Driver was in it. That was her breakout performance.
She gave a heart-rending performance in that.
Oh, yeah. And it was Chris O'Connell and Colin Firth. Play love interest, and it's about three friends entering the university in Dublin. Yeah. So that was a good one. And then
regular action.
One of my favorites that I absolutely love, and I read the books, and the movie was good. The books were better.
Always.
Angela's Ashes, you got it.
Another Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yep, 1996, Angela's Ashes. It's a memoir written by Irish-American author Frank McCourt. It's stories about his childhood from when he was in Ireland, the struggles to grow up in a poverty-stricken area. His father was an alcoholic. There was never any money. And then when his baby sister dies, it's just his world crashes. They don't even have the money to bury her properly.
They just lean her up against the porch or something? Or?
No, they ended up doing like a loan that really just took them downhill from there. And it was just really, really a good story. It really taught you what it was like to grow up in that era with nothing, literally nothing. And
was the one with the black and white photo, the close up of the kid's face.
Yes.
Yeah. And then there was the sequel book, but not movie, was Tiz, where Frank is finally in America and his life struggling, you know, to live in America, being raised in Ireland in basically squalor. He always has eyesight problems because he worked in the coal mines. So it was just a really good book. It was one of those that you kept tissues nearby. It was just a good book and a great movie. So, let's see. Oh, another good one. Steve McQueen directed this historical drama, Hunger, 2008. And it was about the men of the Provisional Irish Republican Army who starved themselves in prison to protest the fact that the British government revoked their political status. Michael Fassbender plays Bobby Sand, the first of the prisoners to starve himself to death. So this is another one where it was really just, it was heart-wrenching and eye-opening. It was a good movie. So if you get a chance, Hunger, and it was directed by Steve McQueen. So that's a good one to look for.
Not exactly.
My goodness. Fassbender must have been a really young squirt at the time.
I think so.
Bobby Sands, I'm sorry, died, Jeff, what were you saying? 1982?
Okay.
I believe. That's when the Hunger Fest took place.
Yeah. I was just going to say it probably wasn't a popcorn movie.
No. And I remember hearing that was the year I graduated from high school, dating myself. And I remember hearing about the men, about him dying, about them doing this. So, all right, let's go on to a better one.
Did you say dating yourself?
Yeah, dating as in I'm making myself older than people think I am.
Oh, I thought you was dating yourself. I was wondering how was that going?
You know, I just don't return any of my phone calls.
She blocked herself.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. Well, I'm working on it. There's a lot of Jameson involved. Okay. Let's go to the next year, 2009, Undine. It was an Irish romantic film directed and written by Neil Jordan, starring...
How's that spelled?
O-N-D-I-N-E.
O-N-D-I-N. Okay.
Yeah.
I almost thought you were mispronouncing Undine, which was like a mermaid.
You got to figure if she's...
Well, maybe I am... Because you're close, because it's not a mermaid. I thought she said Undine. I could be pronouncing it wrong, but it's actually about a Selkie.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Selkie. Yeah. So
it could be.
Well, yeah. A Selkie is not quite a mermaid. A Selkie is one that can come onto the land and remove their seal skin. And as long as it doesn't get stolen, then they can return back to the sea.
Right. And that had Colin Farrell in it and Alicia, and I'm not even going to try her last, Baklida? Not sure. Don't know how to say Alicia's last name. The film was shot in location on Castletown Beer, Ireland.
The area sounds familiar.
It's more than likely going to be one where it's got the big cliffs, because I do remember this movie. But the film, it touches on the possible existence of the mythological Selkie, bringing hope and love to humans they want so much to become. So it was just a cute little film.
Yeah.
So next one, Leap Year, 2010, Amy Adams.
Oh, that was so cool.
Yeah. She plays a woman underrated. Who travels to Ireland to propose to her boyfriend, Adam Scott, on a leap day. As the story goes, a man can't turn a woman down on that particular day of the year. She encounters some unexpected distractions along the way, including a hot Irish innkeeper. Isn't that the one where her brakes fail and the car just keeps going backwards?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was really a funny movie.
Gorgeous scenery. Whoever Agreed. It was that shot that film,
they
took
say.
A camera out there and wherever it was filmed was just absolutely gorgeous. It was very, very indicative of what, especially the west coast of Ireland, would look like.
And that's
just gorgeous.
Hugh Grant, right?
Matthew Good.
Okay.
Yeah, I know. It's one of those where he looks like him, but it's not. It's not him.
It was off the top of my head without looking it up.
Yeah. This next one I'm going to talk about is actually one I just saw last week, and I really fell in love with it, mostly because it's got one of my favorite actors, Saoirse Ronan. Ronan, there you go. This is the movie Brooklyn. It came out in 2015.
Yes.
It was set in 1951. It was a romantic drama about a young woman who moves from Ireland to Brooklyn in pursuit of a brighter future. she falls in love with an Italian-American named Tony. And back then, everybody stayed separate. You know, Irish people didn't marry or mingle with the Italians. You just went to them for, you know, like your groceries and stuff. You didn't intermarry. You didn't. It was like separate districts all in the same town. So it was pretty wild that they did that, that they were able to bring that out. And it actually was kind of cool because they even showed some of the bigotry right from Tony's family within the movie. So it was kind of cool one. Anyway, they secretly marry before she goes back to Ireland to see her mother, who's doing poorly. And it says when a death in her family brings her back to Ireland, but it's not. Her mother hasn't died yet. She must decide whether she wants to return to Brooklyn and the man she left behind, because she actually does meet a nice man in Ireland when she goes back to see her mother. And she's got to decide, does she want to go back to America with all the hardships there are trying to fit in, which she's already been there like 2-3 years, and she's over the worst of it. And she's married, but she doesn't tell anyone until the day before she leaves that she's actually married. But it's a really good one, and Saoirse Ronan is a fantastic actress. So,
and it also has a very underutilized Emily Bett Rickards from Arrow and the
yes.
CW universe.
Yep. And then the only other ones I have is Leprechaun, which we already talked about. All 7 horrible movies of Leprechaun.
They weren't all horrible. The first one was relatively entertaining.
Okay, it went downhill from there.
Yeah.
Yes, it did.
Yeah, it was kind of like on the slope to start with.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, originally, because you not only had pre-Friends Jennifer Aniston, looking as she had done on the sketch comedy show with Julie Brown, she used to do, but also the guy who was the bully in the first Pee Wee Herman movie, little fat guy,
was
sort of like one of the protagonists in that. Just saying.
Hey. Well, there's a really interesting movie. It was just on Turner Classic Movies, as a matter of fact. It's from 1957, called The Rising of the Moon. The Rising of the Moon is actually a Irish revolutionary song from back in the 1920s. And it's a trilogy of different stories of oppression of the British in Ireland. One of them being a short story called Troubles, about the political prisoner and the almost execution of Sean Curran. Black and white. Absolutely brilliant. If you get a chance to find The Rising of the Moon, it's an extremely good, powerful series of stories on film. Didn't go very far, but they're brilliant.
Better than Leprechaun, huh?
Yes.
Yeah. Pretty much anything better than that.
So, what about some of the other stuff you got there?
Like what?
Well,
the only other thing, that was it for the movies. I didn't want to keep going on and on about movies. The only thing I really have left in the way of Irish food was something that my mom did make. Like I said, we didn't really get into traditional stuff, but something that her mother had taught her and her mother, you know, on and on, was potato candy that we used to make. And we literally, when we had nothing else in the house and it was 3 days till dad got paid, mom would make potato candy. She literally would start off with like 2 tablespoons of potato flakes from instant mashed potatoes. Add, I think it was a tablespoon, 1 or 2 tablespoons of warm water until it made like a little paste. And then she would start adding 10X sugar. And keep adding until she literally had a white stiff dough. She would put some 10X sugar on the cutting board, put down this big blob of white that was actually just 10X sugar and a little bit of powdered potato flakes, and roll it out nice and thin, spread it with peanut butter, roll it back up, dust it with powdered sugar, and cut it. And that was our treat. That's what she called potato candy.
No, sounds cool. I mean, we used to make a pancakes all the time. Oh, yeah. My mother had, you know, mashed potatoes left over from something. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. The next morning, she just, you know, put them in her hand and made them into pancakes and stuck them into the skillet, and we'd have potato pancakes for breakfast.
Yep. And I was going to mention that, but I realized that's actually a German food.
Yeah. But, I mean, with my
Irish
side of the family being,
too. Yeah, but you know, they used Irish.
German and Dutch, you know, what can I say?
Yeah, but if they used Irish potatoes, then it was Irish.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I live in a town that is most, yeah, exactly. You got to make do with what you got.
Exactly. Well, before I let you jump over to someone else, I'm going to say one thing. There is an Irish character from, not really a legend, a true person, who I've always admired. I've read different books on her, and I absolutely love her. Grace O'Malley, who was the Irish pirate queen.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
I mean, even Queen Elizabeth II, she admired her, hated her, but she admired her. I mean, she actually really respected her, but Grace had the freedom to do the things that Queen Elizabeth never could, because she was on a throne and she had men and other people in Parliament telling her what she could or could not do. And here was Grace out there, you know, on the high seas with her own boat, and in time boats, doing what she wants to. And I think she respected her for it, but she also hated her because she had the freedom she never could. So when she imprisoned her, I can't remember if it was 3 years or 8 years. I can't remember how. 8 years. Grace came out. She was never quite the same. But her number one lieutenant, Tiger Nan, came and got her and nursed her back to health. But it was, if you guys ever get the chance to read anything about her or read the book that's out there, there's actually several books out there about her. It's fantastic. It's the life that she led and what all she did and how she just kind of stood up for Ireland, no matter how many times the English queen kept pushing Catholicism upon them. She stood behind her people and she went to jail to protect them. So, okay, I got my shout out to Grace. We're good.
And did she have a pirate name?
Well, her real name, and I'm going to butcher it. I just know I'm going to butcher it. Her Irish name was Grania an Mall, I believe is how it's pronounced. But it's Grainne was how they say Grace or Gran. It's Grania. And then an Mall. And she was actually married. She bore two sons and a daughter. And as soon as she was done having her kids, she kind of said goodbye to her husband. They only came together, obviously, three times. She really didn't like him. It was an arranged marriage. Huh. And she had boats from her father. Her husband did put money into her boat, into her fleet at one time, but they really did not get along because she wouldn't be the traditional Irish woman. She never would. So, yep. So it's just a really good story. It's a great piece of history. If you ever get a chance, read up on her. Grace O'Malley or Granny Ann Mull.
All right. Barbara? What? You got some more wisdom?
I'll have to think about it.
Did I lose her?
I don't know. I haven't been kicked off. I'm just trying tonight. To find my...
She's trying to find something.
Well, we could finish up. We can put a bow on the Irish films by mentioning the best Disney film, you know, next to the underrated and misconstrued Song of the South. But with what? I have never understood why people hate that movie. All I can think of is, let's put it this way, you know, Song of the South, you've got the male lead is black. He's the smartest character in the entire film. He's smarter than all the white folks. The boy, his bullies are white.
His best friend is black. So I'm like, where's the racism? I don't understand this. The fact he was talking in the dialect of the time the movie was set.
Exactly.
Oh, how dare they? You know, that's like saying, oh, Shakespeare. Sir, they're talking Elizabethan. What are we thinking? Jeez. But with Darby O'Gill and the Little People, one of the most awesome films, with a lot of practical effects. The actor who played King Brian of Nagnashiga also played the landowner that Darby O'Gill is the caretaker. And he and his daughter, Katie, have lived in a small manor house off to the side. And he's there to take care of the grounds. But what's interesting is he's very much a believer in the fae folk. And as Katie once describes to Sean Connery's character, the wee folk at night, the wee folk give him sport. And so he's constantly trying to capture King Brian. I don't know why he has to deal with, you know, this one guy instead of like, oh, just any leprechaun will do. But we establish in that particular mythos that you can get three wishes as long as you keep your eye on them. And as long as you don't wish a fourth wish, you can keep the three wishes. Now, what's interesting is there are mentions, kind of like throwaway mentions, when he finally manages to trick King Brian into staying with him for 2 weeks while he's trying to think of his second and third wish. King Brian begins pointing out that while he is absent from his kingdom, all manner of darkness and dark entities are going to start swelling the land. And at one point, Katie goes off to capture the horse. And what I think is always cool, and a lot of people never hear this line, is that Sean Connery tells him that she's gone to get the horse, Cleopatra. And Darby just suddenly realizes, good Lord, she's been chasing a puka.
Yeah.
Now, a puka is an elemental spirit. It can be very mischievous. It can be very benign. It can be very malevolent, depending on the context of how you deal with it. Now, what's very interesting is, does anyone here know of another film in which there's a very famous puka? And I'll give you a hint.
Harvey.
There you go. Yep, yep. Harvey is a puka. And my cat, who is sleeping on the pillow. Yeah, he's asleep. Is named Puka. And his sister is named Sprite. Although probably I should have named her Pixie, but whatever. Would have been a little more alliterative. But yeah, he's very affectionate, but can be a little mischievous and such like that. And I've always been amazed that they can throw in, Darby O'Gill threw in a lot of these references, like the Coach de Bauer, which is the death coach, and such like that. And of course, as I mentioned earlier, Sean Connery sings. Very catchy tune, by the way. But yeah, I just don't understand why ABC the cable ABC, family ABC or whatever, doesn't show Darby O'Gill today.
Why? I know.
They do a lot of things, or don't do a lot of things like that they should. Yeah.
Well, they do show, you know, extra footage Harry Potter movies where they have scenes that are not in the theatrical cut. It's like the extended version. It's not on DVD. But yeah, Darby O'Gill, one of my favorites. And of course, you've got the Banshee, which for the time was a very terrifying figure in a movie, especially for Disney. It's a kid who'll scare the daylights out of them. Are you aware that when Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs came out in 1938, that they had to reupholster over half the seats in Radio City Music Hall because all the kids were peeing in their seats?
What?
Because it was so terrifying. The witch and all that. It was Disney made some really terrifying sequences in his films.
Mm.
I found that little trick out. I learned that little tidbit on Jeopardy. I'm like, oh wow, I can understand that for a little kid.
Oh my goodness. I guess that's probably why I wet the bed quite often when I was a kid.
Because banshees came running into your house?
Oh yeah. Evidently.
And it's interesting how different critters, monsters, etc., go across various cultures. Like unicorns, there's Jewish unicorns, there's Scottish unicorns. Of course, the unicorn is the national symbol for Scotland. But unicorns are also Gaelic in nature, so therefore there were Irish unicorns.
Huh. Yeah. Well, Irish unicorns also, if you look at the old tapestries, tended to almost have goat-like feet. Mm-hmm. They didn't have horse feet.
Yeah, they cloven hooves. Yeah.
Yeah.
As well as griffins. Yeah. There's griffins pretty much everywhere.
Yeah, we talked about that today. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I learned that today from Barbara.
Yeah, you learn a lot from Barbara.
You do. There should be a book, you know.
Well, there is. It's called The Book of Barbara. You haven't read it yet?
No, I'm finishing The Book of Eli. I'll do that one next.
No, it's from the ceiling. It'll be available on Kindle shortly.
Yeah. There you go.
Crap, I've only got a nook.
So there's a lot of little critters out there, and you wonder just how each culture managed to get the same type of mythical beings.
I would say probably it would have to do a lot with people going from one country to another and taking some of the traditions over to the other countries.
Certainly would do that.
I think she's making, yeah, but she is also mentioning like different continents having pyramids and things like that. Like, how did they get that idea?
Serpent heads, which you find in pretty much every culture in every continent. It's fascinating to see that.
Yeah.
Don't want to say it's aliens, but it's aliens.
Well, it could have been.
Did you guys know that there is an Irish version of a vampire?
I came across the fact that people used to believe that when redheaded people died, they became vampires.
Okay. Well, it's known as a Far Darrig or a... I can't pronounce the Gaelic version of it, but this was what caused Bram Stoker to create his version of Dracula, that and Vlad Tepes. And it said that there was once a magical Irish tyrant who enforced great cruelties on his people. Thankfully, he was killed and buried in a standing up position. However, the relief was not long-lasting, and the next day, he emerged from the grave using magical powers more cruel and vicious than ever. And the Far Darrig has been known to drink the blood of his victims, and some say that he was also the inspiration behind Dracula. And it said, there's only one way to stop this creature. You must kill him and bury him upside down.
Now, by upside down, do they mean head down or just with it's laying on his belly?
Head down.
Okay.
Head down.
That way, man, if he's really got to dig
deep. He's digging the wrong way.
Yep.
Now, when I was in London in 1984, I took the tour of Highgate, and I had the choice of this beautiful young docent or this more craggly, white-bearded gentleman, and I thought, I got to go with the guy because he's going to have cooler stories, and he did. And he pointed out that a lot of the crypts, because back in Dickensian times, death was big business because people were dying right and left. And you essentially showed your wealth status as to how you were buried or how your relatives were buried. In the huge mausoleums, they would have they're sealed if you were poor. You'd have a little door with a window if you were richer. And if you were completely rich, you didn't have anything. You just saw the casket. And there were underground crypts where people would go on Sunday. The families would go to the family crypt and have tea in the crypt with their dead relatives. And Bram Stoker, living in London at the time as a very sickly child, could look down on the glass ceilings of this these crypts
and see families having tea with their families, as it were. And our tour guide said that was one of the main inspirations for him coming up with the undead.
Hmm.
Cool.
Wow.
Well, there's so many different Celtic and Irish, what we refer to as fairies or fae or she, and they
I've
kind
been
of
they're pronounced Shay. Well, when they're by themselves. I mean, we've got Shay, the she and the banshee.
She,
and all that.
Banshee, and yeah. Shay, but fae, fairy.
Yep.
And they take the form of so many different things, and I was fortunate enough to have seen one of the fae when I was there in 1992 in the form of, oh, guess what, a cat. But there was also, and that one wasn't terrifying. That one was very comforting because I just kept seeing it along the way, didn't make any inference from it except for the fact that it just followed us. But I was in Scotland in 2005, and I encountered something at a bed and breakfast that really scared the crap out of me. I normally don't get afraid of much of anything. Humans, they definitely scare the hell out of me. But when it comes to something like the paranormal or mythical creatures or things like that, it really doesn't bother me much. But something happened to me when I was in Scotland that I cannot explain, and I had no idea about what this may have been until after I got home and looked it up, and it was known as a cat, Sid or she. And this is a mythical cat that takes the form of a feline that has a very, very dark presence about it. And being a cat person, I'm used to cat fights. You know, anybody that's been around a cat, when there's been a cat fight, it's a very nasty sound. I mean, hearing a cat fight is just a really awful sound. You know, the caterwauling, the screaming and everything else, and the growling and so forth. And it bothers me. I try to break it up. Well, I was in a bed and breakfast in 2005, just outside of Edinburgh, the night before we were getting ready to leave. And I kept hearing what I thought was a cat fight going on the property. Now, this is way out in what I would refer to as farmland, because there was a huge farm on the other side with a lot of cattle. And we were well off the main road. And it was like 2 o'clock in the morning. And my friend and I, we were listening to something on the radio and playing cribbage. And then suddenly I heard what I thought was a cat fight. I'm like, oh, I can't let this go on. I can't stand this. So I left the room, went downstairs, walked outside into the parking lot area. And I thought I saw a cow because it was fairly tall, probably the size of my shoulders. But I realized that all the cattle had gone home earlier in the evening, but I could still hear this really awful guttural sound of a cat coming from this area. And I walked a little bit closer, and there was like a cinder block wall there. And I yelled over, you know, knock it off, cut it out. And I picked up some gravel from the parking lot area, and I started throwing it. And then suddenly this thing started growling at me. And I mean, giving off a growl that set my hair completely on edge. I mean, every part of my body was just alert. And I looked around and tried to allow my eyes to adjust to the dark, because there was a security light outside of the bed and breakfast, and it had come on when I went out into the parking lot. So when I got close to this cinder block wall, I kept hearing this thing, but I couldn't hear anything. And even if it's a cat, you can generally hear something moving, but I couldn't hear anything. Then suddenly I saw something that was dark, about the height of a little bit above my waist. And it went from left to right, headed toward the fence to the road. And it kept growling the whole time. And when I realized, oh my God, you know, this thing is huge. It's bigger than a cat. It's about the size of a small cow. And the fact that my whole body was just on alert, I turned around and headed toward the door to that bed and breakfast. And I probably hit that door, which was like 60 feet away, in three steps. That's how scared I was. I got there in like three steps and hit that door and slammed the door real quick and then ran upstairs to my room. And my friend was standing there. We both looked out and we could see this dark shadow of something going toward the road. And then it suddenly leaped the fence onto the road and was gone. And I have never been so scared in my life. The next morning, we were packing up to leave and we were putting all of our suitcases in the back of the trunk. And some other guests in the bed and breakfast had come out and they said, "Did you hear what was going on last night?" And we looked at them and said, yeah, you know, we could hear it. And these people said they have never been so scared because it didn't sound natural. It didn't sound normal. And so on the way to the airport that day, I was telling my friend, you know, I've encountered so many things in my life. I've encountered ghosts, elementals, and, you know, fae. But this, I had no clue what it was. Absolutely none. And after I got home, I started looking it up. And the only thing that I could come up with was the myth of the cat Sith. And, you know, I got to be honest with you, I'm not normally into cryptids, you know, like Bigfoot and everything. But that, I'm sitting here right now with goosebumps because that thing scared the living daylights out of me.
Did you say Sith, like not Jedi?
Yeah. Actually, it's spelled the same way, S-I-T-H. Okay. I think it's S-I-T-H-E, actually. Okay.
So what is this thing supposed to do if it catches you?
I wasn't about to find out. It scared me so bad that by the time I hit the door and slammed it, I was shaking like a leaf. I had no idea what it was, but after I looked it up, apparently it's a very menacing feline type of spirit. And if it does get a hold of you, it can cause you bad luck. It can cause you bad health. And, you know, wow.
Oh, so it, when it catches up to you, it just sort of like attaches itself. And so you get the bad luck. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, you're aware, you'd indicated the concept of cryptids, that the Celtic Isles has the cryptids called big cats.
Yeah, I did not know that at the time. In 2005, I had no clue.
Mm. Wow.
Totally unaware of it.
Well, our time is kind of like shooting right on by. You guys have done a great job talking tonight. I got some stuff here called talking about ghosts in Ireland. some of the things, terms that they come up with. And let's see. However unexplainable in Ireland, these ghosts do fall into certain categories. And although they do sometimes overlap, for the sake of this section of the website, they are called living ghosts. The first one talks about doubles. Doubles are when different people see the same person in different places at the same time.
Yeah, like a doppelganger.
Well,
or by location.
Doppelganger is a little bit different. Doppelgangers is a doppelganger has found a new life, excuse the pun, in modern language to mean someone that looks identical to someone else. But a doppelganger is actually when a person is seen usually doing the same thing, but in two different places. Vardogers are spirits that precede the witness. So when the person in question arrives at a place he or she has never been, people whom he or she has never met recognize him or her kind of like deja vu in reverse.
Ooh, that's scary.
Time slips. This is literally when a person seems to have been transported to another time. I've never had that happen, I don't think. Presence are probably one of the most common ghosts. They are when the observer gets a strange feeling from a place or item. Poltergeists are ghosts that disturb objects, and this can be either mischievous or malicious. And this usually centers around one particular living being, sometimes said to be young teenage girls. Interactive ghosts. These ghosts usually appear with a message to the living or respond to them somehow. Replays are images that appear doing the exact same thing at the exact same time in the exact same place. It's just like a ghost doing the same thing over and over and over. Banshee. Sometimes seen in Ireland, a banshee is an old lady or a beautiful maiden. She is always crying and is said to be the harbinger of death. Usually follows families with an O or Mech in the surname. And there's I had a whole lot of stuff on banshees, but they are crying usually ahead of someone who is going to die. And if you hear one, then somebody close to you or yourself could be going to die, which was pretty interesting. I had another one is called keening. Have you ever heard of keening?
No.
Keening is, there's an ancient Irish tradition called keening where a woman will wail following a person's death. Keeners, as they are called, were often in demand, and people would even hire the best keeners to wail for their loved ones. This leads us to wonder if the banshee, also known as the wailing woman, could be a ghost of a great keener. The difference being that keening happens after the death of a person, while the banshee's cry happens before the death of a person. Therefore, hearing a banshee's wail means someone close to you or you will die very soon. So those are just some of the other things like that.
You've also got the Morrigan, which is a Celtic deity who, if you're about to go into battle and you come across her washing a bloody shirt in the river, that's your shirt and you're going to die in battle.
Really?
Yeah.
I just won't look at her, so I won't know if it's my shirt or not.
Too late. And you should have kept a ticket for it, too. So I was looking up the Cat Sith, and it mentioned the both versions are pronounced Caught She, and translates into English as fairy cat. And, yeah, it was mentioned that they can be, let's see, it's a little longer than I thought, but it's a there's a mythological set of cats that makes its home in Celtic folklore, and says I'll have to put the link on the page because this is a little longer than I thought. We don't have time to get into it as much as I'd like to, so I'll email that to myself so I can just grab the link.
Okay, there's all kinds of stories in Ireland too about the different castles and the ghosts that haunts them and different things like that. And Kat stayed in a couple of them that did have spirits in them, right?
Oh, definitely, especially Ashford Castle. And Ashford Castle is actually kind of a link to what Tina was talking about with the John Wayne film, The Quiet Man. The Quiet Man was filmed in a couple of different places in Ireland, but the small cottage that was featured in the film, his cottage, was in a place called Cong, not King Kong, but C-O-N-G. And Ashford Castle is in Cong. And that's where I stayed with my sister in 1992. And we were there on St. Patrick's Day. And it is nicely haunted. So, yeah, I mean, any place that you go in Ireland, I think you can throw a stone and find some place that's haunted. No doubt about it.
By what?
A number of things. What was in the castle when my sister and I were there. If you read in my book, it was called, The Tapping Ghost. I have no idea who he was, but he kept my sister awake to the point where she was pissed off at me the next morning because I didn't warn her. So.
Well, have you ever heard of the story of Carlingford Rectory?
That sounds familiar. Never been there, though.
It's in County Louth.
Louth and Meath. It's right around Dublin.
There's supposed to have been, and I don't have time to read all of it, but there was a ghost haunting in it. And I guess it was so famous that the paranormal investigation by Hans Holzer, he went over there and investigated it. So cool. you can look that up on, just type in Ghost of Carlingford Rectory, and it'll come up in a story, and you can read all about it. But it has also in there about his investigation and what he found. So interesting, a lot of interesting stuff with Ireland. It's a shame that the Catholics and the Protestants had to split the place and fight so much over it and cause all of it. Is a lot of Ireland kind of poor?
No, not anymore.
Not anymore.
Not anymore. I can honestly say that the last time that I was there in 2006, the majority of the people there now are pretty affluent. The younger generations, they've sold off their lands and moved into the larger towns to get better jobs and everything. And all the farmland and everything has been taken over by corporations and so forth. Unfortunately, most of the castles and the touristy places are owned by either Americans or some other people because they're the only ones that have the money for the upkeep. But Ireland is not really all that poor. They really are. I mean, it's just like any other country. You've got your towns and your areas where you have places that are still making livings off the land. But as a rule, Ireland is not poor. They are absolutely wonderful people, beautiful people. And if anybody gets a chance to go over there, you've got to do it. I mean, it's the most beautiful place that I think I've ever seen in my life. If I could retire over there, I'd do it in a heartbeat. I'd buy a castle if I hit the lottery and move over there. No doubt about it.
And they support the arts. They support authors,
yes.
Musicians, poets. Yes.
Yes. And they finally brought the Celtic language back to the schools. For the longest time, they stopped the Celtic language being taught in school. Now they're doing it again, which I think is fantastic.
Right. You got to keep the heritage.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just want to throw out there that coming in April 13th and 14th, we will be in Gettysburg.
Yep.
Paranormal View will be there. We got lots of people coming. We're going to be investigating on Friday the 13th. Mm-hmm. And where's that place at, Kat?
The Gettysburg Brew Works.
Right. We're going to be investigating there. And then on the 14th, we're going to be doing a show live from the Ghost Exchange. So
then afterwards, a small investigation of their property.
Right, right. So if you guys want to come, look us up on Facebook. I'll give you information and everything. And when you can be there and when we'll be there. And because just those two places won't be the only thing we'll be doing. Saturday during the day, we'll be out on the battlefield going around investigating and looking at all the history. So feel free to come and join us. With that, I want to thank Kat Gash for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
And I want to thank Tina Marie Ronan for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
And I want you guys to give out where people can be in contact with you, because you do a lot of other stuff, all kinds of those weird hats and goggles and glasses glued on them. So
thanks, Anna.
Oh, she does some beautiful things. I've got a few pieces that she's made. And I tell you, if you want anything steampunk, you've got to contact Tina.
Right. She does.
Thank great you, job. Guys.
A lot of give yeah. out your information, both of you, and certainly. Then stay on until after we're off.
Well, you can find me on Facebook. It's Tina Marie Ronan. I am on Facebook, but both of my companies are on there. I have Nature's Earth Ware, WARE, and that is all the metaphysical jewelry and gear that I make. Or if you're interested in steampunk or steampunk apparel or jewelry, you can find me at Heirloom Haberdashery. And I do custom pieces all the time.
And she is on Facebook too.
Yep.
And everybody so, say it, Haberdashery, because it's nice.
Haberdashery.
One of Ceiling Cat's favorite words.
Books. If you want books from Kat Gash, great books.
Yes. Good books.
And look her up on where, Facebook?
You can find me on Facebook, Kat Snyder Gash. My book, My Life Amidst the Paranormal, is available through Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, and also through HauntedRoadMedia.com.
All right. So, with that, our time's just about out, and I'm going to let Jeff give out our stuff real quick.
Yes, go to theparanormalview.com. That's our official website. You can go to Facebook, look up The Paranormal View, or just facebook.com/theparanormalview, all one word. There we are. Like our page, I try and put interesting articles, both spooky and sciencey, throughout the week. You can follow me on Twitter and on Instagram at Real Badger, RealBadger.
All right.
And next week I won't be here because I'm shooting my short, which last week was a rehearsal, not a shoot.
Okay.
Have fun.
Barbara, you got anything real
just
quick?
Find us on theparanormalview.com.
All right. With that, I want to again thank everybody for taking the time to be with us tonight, and hope everybody has had a great St. Paddy's Day. And until next week, this is Henry Foister,
Jeffrey Gould.
And we will see you next week at the same time. So good night, everybody. You've been listening to The Paranormal View on the Para-X Radio Network. Join us again next week at the same time for more of The Paranormal.